From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of September 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Joe Jansen. He's an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois and has just written an article for the FarmDoc Daily website. You can find it at the top of the page at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu on marketing in these very low-price environments and how to capture the carry. We'll talk with him about that, and then what the USDA reports, the WASDE crop production report this week, and the grain stocks report at the end of the month might mean for the marketplace. Speaking of USDA, we'll also hear today from the state statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, and Indiana, along with an update from Minnesota as it relates to how well the crop has made it through this dry period coming out of the month of August and into the first couple of weeks of September. And after that, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at 402.5. That was down 3 cents on the afternoon. The March contract at 423.25, down 2.75. And May futures at 434.5, down 2.5 cents. Soybeans in the November contract at 997.25, 20.75 lower. January at 1015.25, down 20.25. And March futures at $10.30, down 19.5 cents, bean meal down $7.40, and the bean oil 78 cents lower. Joe Jansen, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, now joins us to discuss the marketplace. He's written an article for the FarmDoc Daily website. It's titled Post-Harvest Grain Marketing in a Low-Price Environment. You can find it on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It's also at willag.org, willag.org. I like to think of a title that just simply says how to capture the carry, which is what we discuss, Joe, on the radio periodically from time to time. So you begin by suggesting there were two big things that happened this summer that had you think about this and began to consider what it really meant for marketing. What were those two big things?
So obviously, the one that I think everyone who follows grain markets is aware is that prices are lower than they were back in May and June. That's the first one. But the second thing, and what tends to happen when we move into a lower price environment, is the market tends to reward people for storing grain. It ups the incentive to kind of hold some grain back because the market's well supplied in the short run. So how it does that is by widening out or increasing the spread between delivery at different dates. So think about delivery and next March relative to delivery now at harvest, for example. Those spreads have widened out significantly in the last 3 to 4 months, both for corn and for soybeans.
So what's an explanation of why the spreads are in place again?
The spreads are really there to just kind of tell you, what's the trade-off between bringing grain to the market today? What could you get for that relative to holding it back and waiting, selling it later? And the market is saying, we expect that, there's a little bit more reward now for holding grain back because the market is well supplied. We have this big, what is anticipated to be, we can argue about the exact size, but I think is going to be a fairly large U.S. corn and soybean crop coming to market. So because of that, we need to incentivize a little bit more storage going forward through the marketing year to kind of spread that supply out.
Is it that the price of corn and soybeans is likely to be at those prices when we arrive in those delivery months?
Well, I mean, we expect that the price is going to be higher, but there is no guarantee. This doesn't sort of change the risk that still exists in the market. I mean, there's nothing to say that premium for later delivery can't collapse. Just as prices, fell over the summer, that premium for delivery later in the year could also very easily collapse. So really the only way to capture that return to storage is to, as you said, sell the carry. Sell grain. And the simplest way to do that is to sell grain for delivery later in the year. but doing that now when we with a known sort of return to storage.
So how do you evaluate that? I mean, what things go into trying to discover whether this is useful to do or not?
That's right. So, you know, you could say that, for example, the current spread between harvest and March soybeans is about 32 cents. So the market's saying there's 32 cents of revenue there. Now, obviously, it's not free to wait. And so we think about what are the costs of storing. We kind of really divide those into two things. Any sort of physical costs that are associated with, you know, putting grain in a bin, maintaining it in good condition, and then bringing it to market later in the year. Those physical costs, those are sort of we call physical costs. And then the rest are sort of opportunity costs. The fact that you're not going to get paid for grain today and you have to defer that revenue till some later date. So we kind of try and put a number on both of those things and then compare them to the spread that exists, that the market's sort of the signal that the market's sending.
Can you go through a couple of examples?
Yeah, sure. So those physical costs, often we kind of use as a starting point what an elevator might charge for commercial storage. That's going to vary, you know, from elevator to elevator, but somewhere in the neighborhood of, say, you know, 4 cents per bushel per month. As a good starting point. Hopefully, if a farmer owns their own storage infrastructure, has their own bins, has space in those bins, that maybe that cost is a little bit lower on farm. But we do know that all that physical space is going to be at a premium, and the price of it may sort of be higher here in a year like this one in 2024. And then on the opportunity cost side, we really just sort of think about putting an interest rate or thinking about a number that values a dollar in the future relative to a dollar today. So that's just picking an interest rate and making sure that interest rate covers the time period that we're thinking about. So say a storage horizon of 4 months. So you take an annual interest rate and, you know, take four twelfths to cover that 4 month period. So multiply that by 4/12 and you get the interest rate that applies to that particular storage decision. We walk through some of these calculations in the Farm Doc Daily article that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, so I like the idea in the article. You said, you know, just if you put money in the bank, that's the opportunity cost. You put that at about 4.5%. So that's what you might earn. If you make the sale today, deliver the grain, you get paid this fall, and you'll get 4.5% a month if it's in the bank. However, then you turned around and said, but wait a second, what if you have to get a loan or you would use this money to pay bills, but rather if you don't make the sale, what about the loan rate, which you put at 8.5%, which changes things dramatically.
Changes things a lot, right? And so we know one thing that's happened in the last couple of years is obviously we're in a much higher interest rate environment than we had been for a long time. We've been kind of used to very, very low interest rates, and that's really changed in the last couple of years. That ups that opportunity cost, particularly if the best thing that you could do with that money that you get now is do something like paying down operating loan debt that has a relatively high interest rate. Current operating loan rates for new loans are in the neighborhood of 8.5%. And so you have to think about, like, what's the best use of this money if I had it now? And if I have something great that I can do with it, that kind of ups that opportunity cost. And kind of incentivizes you to think about getting that revenue in your hands so you can do something else good with it, rather than deferring grain sales to the future and waiting to get paid until later.
So when you put all those numbers together, can you do corn and soybeans, maybe the return on the storage for each scenario?
Yeah. So we find that there these carries that have gotten a lot bigger. The spread between those, say, March and harvest time futures contracts is large, but it basically just covers or offers a small return both on corn and soybeans if you assume that 4.5 or lower kind of lower opportunity cost interest rate. In the case of, you know, if we think about full-blown sort of commercial storage physical costs and high opportunity costs at sort of current farm loan debt rate, interest rates, the storage returns are still negative. So you really have to think about, You know, what are the specifics of your situation? And is it a good time for our business to store? Not sort of, is it a good time for everyone to store?
Yeah. So the difference is on corn, I'm making about 2 cents on storage and losing 2.5 or something like that. And
that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, these assumptions that you make about your own individual cost of storage can really kind of swing the profitability of that decision.
So what are the implications across the board here then?
The implications across the board are, I think it's a more attractive time to store, but everyone has to kind of make that calculation and decide, you know, how does that work in the context of our own operation?
Finally, because things are always changing, USDA has a couple of reports that are due out this month, 3 that will have a direct impact on the corn and soybean market. This week on Thursday, the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates, the crop production report, which drives that WASDE report to some extent, and then, of course, the grain stocks report at the end of the month. How should producers think about them?
Well, they're a source of risk, right? That we know that markets will move, and the days that we tend to see big movements are around big information events like these USDA reports, particularly on the in thinking about storage returns. I think our expectations for sort of the, you know, how much grain we need in storage, how much the market needs to move to kind of incentivize the right amount of storage, are really going to be driven by that grain stocks report, which is kind of going to tell us how much of that old crop was left over at the beginning of the marketing year. I think that could be a big market moving event. And producers want to sort of assess their risk preference and think about, do they want to sort of lay off some risk, make some sales now, or kind of wait and see until after these big market moving events.
Thank you much, Joe.
Thank you, Todd.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may see his article on capturing the carry on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or search it out there at willag.org, our website at willag.org, where there's always information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. The theme music for the closing market report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Coming up next, we'll hear from the state statisticians and how the crop made it through the dry weather last week. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows that 74% of the corn crop across the nation is at least in the dense stage. Of the total crop, 29% has now matured. The rolling five-year average there is 24%, and 5% of the crop has been harvested. The five-year average, or rolling average, is 3%. Corn conditions set at 48% good and 16% excellent. Last week, those numbers were 50% good and 15% excellent. 25% of the soybean crop is dropping leaves, 21% the five-year average, and the condition of the crop is said to be 52% good and 13% excellent. The previous week was also 52% and 13%. And finally, the winter wheat planting is proceeding at a rate of about 6% in total. The five-year average is also 6%. Now here are the state statisticians from across the Midwest with updates from their regions.
This is Hunter Bloom. Iowa experienced cooler temperatures and dry conditions across most of the state. Field activities included cutting hay and chopping corn silage. Subsoil moisture condition rated 4% very short, 24% short, 70% adequate, and 2% surplus. Corn in the dough stage or beyond reached 96% this week. 74% of the corn crop reached the dense stage or beyond, 6 days behind last year and 2 days behind the five-year average. Corn maturity reached 20%, 4 days behind last year and 1 day behind the average. Corn condition was rated 77% good to excellent. Soybean setting pods reached 97%. Soybeans coloring or beyond reached 42%, 4 days behind last year and 1 day behind the five-year average. Soybeans dropping leaves reached 9%. 4 days behind last year and 3 days behind the five-year average. Soybean condition was 78% good to excellent. The state's third cutting of alfalfa hay reached 93%, 8 days behind last year, but 1 week ahead of the five-year average. Pasture condition rated 63% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Hunter Bloom.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Ag Statistics Service. Rainfall was above average in most parts of Illinois last week, and temperatures were also above normal. Rainfall averaged 1.04 inches across the state, and that was almost 1/4 inch above normal. Temperatures averaged 78.5 degrees, and that was 5.3 degrees above average. And topsoil moisture was rated 8% very short, 23 short, 67 adequate, and 2% surplus. That is a little wetter than the previous week. 96% of soybean acres were setting pods compared to 89% 1 year ago and 91 for the five-year average. 14% of acres were dropping leaves compared to 3 normally, and we received a few reports of soybeans being harvested. Soybean conditions improved slightly and were rated 10% very poor to poor, 22 fair, and 68% good to excellent. 70% of corn acres have reached the dense stage compared to 63 1 year ago and also 63 normally. 24% of corn acres were mature compared to 11 normally, and harvest has begun in some parts of the state. Corn conditions were rated 8% very poor to poor, 21 fair, and 71% good to excellent. The third cutting of alfalfa hay is now 84% finished compared to 81 normally. Pasture conditions were rated 11% very poor to poor, 37 fair, and 52% good to excellent. Thank you to everyone that responded to the Crop Progress and Condition Survey this week. We really appreciate it. Harvest has begun, so please be careful as you are driving in rural areas. Watch out for large equipment on small roads. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Nathaniel Warnsky, USDA's Indiana State Statistician. Dry conditions continued last week as Indiana farmers prepared for the upcoming harvest. Topsoil moisture levels decreased from the previous week, with 37% rated adequate or surplus. There are 6.6 days suitable for fieldwork for the week ending September 8th. Though dry conditions caused streams to dry and ponds to be down, the conditions of corn and soybean crops remained stable. However, some farmers were concerned that a continued lack of rainfall may adversely impact late planted crops. Corn and soybean progress continued ahead of their respective five-year average paces. Silage harvest was underway as seed corn harvest commenced. Pastures, rounding from lack of rain, had their regrowth stalled. Other activities included manure applications, mowing roadsides, and hauling grain to market and preparing harvest equipment. This is Nathaniel Wonsky, USDA's National Agricultural Indiana State Statistician.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress. One quick note from the state of Minnesota, where farmers averaged 6.2 days available for field work last week, and subsoil moisture levels supplies were rated 2% very short, 9% short, and 79% adequate, 10% surplus. Corn in the state of Minnesota, and it is the number 4 corn-producing state in the nation, that's Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, then Minnesota, where corn reached the dough stage. At 93%, corn in the dense stage or beyond was 55%, and that was 10 days behind last year and 5 days behind the rolling 5-year average for Minnesota. 12% of the corn crop has matured. Corn conditions set to be 58% good to excellent. Soybean setting pods reached 96% in Minnesota. Soybeans colored reached 33%, 9 days behind last year and 6 days behind the average. Leaves dropping reached 4%. The condition of the soybean crop in Minnesota, 62% good to excellent. Now let's check in on the climate, the weather with Don Day. He's a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. Thank you so much for being with us. A concern mostly today with Francine, its track. What potential issues it might cause in New Orleans, especially for the export facilities, and how damaging it could be with wind to begin with. And then I want to talk about rainfall up and down the Mississippi River Valley. So start with its track and what potential issues it may cause.
Well, certainly Francine is taking a beeline right into south central and southeastern Louisiana, and will certainly be affecting those areas that you just mentioned. And we're probably going to be looking at Francine reaching hurricane status. Now, I think there's been a trend for maybe the hurricane not to be as strong as some of the model predictions were about 24 hours ago. But with that being said, it's still going to be very impactful, as we could have hurricane force winds move into near New Orleans. The worst of the winds may stay just off the coast, but there's going to be a significant storm surge and very, very heavy rainfall. I know we're looking at rainfall amounts that could be upwards of 6 to 10 inches or more right along that Gulf Coast with Louisiana as it comes on in.
Now, as it makes its way up the Mississippi River Valley, and it appears it's going to just follow the valley right up the Mississippi to the confluence of the Ohio and the Mississippi at Illinois and Missouri. Does the rainfall continue to come? How heavy, and can it make up for the lack of water running in the Mississippi at this point?
Well, it's certainly going to help. The heaviest rainfall is, there's going to be a really sharp line between the heavier rainfall and the rain that's not going to amount to much. And that boundary is going to go across far southern and southwest Indiana through central and southern Illinois, then curving back into eastern and southern and southeastern Missouri. Now, as you get into southeastern Missouri, eastern Arkansas, through Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, and western Kentucky, that's where the heavy rain is. And to your point, it is focused right in the river valley there. So you're looking at a tremendous amount of quantity of rain going into those areas. Now, upstream, it hasn't been very wet lately, and it's not going to be. So while the lower central and lower part of that river basin certainly going to get a lot of rain, upstream, it's a bit on the dry side. So kind of good news and bad news.
Yeah, so at Memphis, seven feet below low level at this point. And I guess that'll be fixed at least for a few weeks or a couple of weeks. I don't know for how long. However, rivers flow towards the sea, and there's not been much rainfall in the upper Midwest. Will that change at all?
Well, not in the short term. Longer term, yes. I mean, the thing you got to remember is this time of year naturally starts to turn drier, and you don't see those heavy rain producing thunderstorms that you get during the summer season. But the northern plains, parts of the Pacific Northwest and northern Rockies, will see an uptick in rain. Let's say after the 10-day period from now, I do see better chances of precipitation coming on into those areas.
Hey, thank you so much, Don. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.